Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Get select Ernie Ball strings, 3 for $10. Save $100 on a Fender Special Edition Strat, or get a Yamaha acoustic for just $199. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
Welcome to the Heat Check Podcast. I'm Wes Goldberg, editor of AllYouCanHeat.com. With me, as always, it's David Ramil. How you doing, David?
Doing really good. Looking forward to talking Heat basketball, and there's not too much pressure on me today, so I'm ready to go.
Chris Bosh doesn't have any pressure on him either. I saw what you did there. So thanks for segueing my segue.
There you go.
Chris Bosh's comments. Go.
Well, I think... for those who don't know what we're talking about, he gave an interview to CBS, Ken Berger. We're not sure quite how to pronounce it, but basically,
Ken, if you're listening, please just send us a message. Let us know which way it goes.
Exactly. Yeah. So saying that he avoided signing with Houston, and I think the buzzword that everybody got out of it is that there would have been too much pressure for him to sign and be part of a big three there along with Dwight Howard and James Harden, and that the pressure, again, his words, would have been to, you know, get a championship or bust. And based on his experiences in Miami, he felt that that was something he didn't want to pursue. And so I guess everybody's making a big deal out of the fact that, you know, he kind of chickened out. I know those aren't his words, but I guess a lot of people are, that's the hot take on this, is that maybe Bosh is a little scared of the pressure of going to Houston and having to compete for a championship. But as you and I discussed just a little while ago, I think it's completely overblown. It makes no sense for him to leave the comfort of Miami, to have the opportunity to be the top dog, and to go to Houston and have to learn how to fit in, have to adapt his game yet again, and not even get the credit for it. If he goes there, he'll just be the third banana, which is how everybody misperceived him over the last 4 years. I think there's a comfort level there with Eric Spoelstra and the Heat front office. There's certainly a comfort level with the players that are on the Heat roster, even though there's a bunch of new players. You've got Dwayne Wade, you've got Udonis Haslem, you've got other key guys, Mario even, that, you know, make Chris Bosh feel comfortable. And that's as tempting as the offer to go to Houston seemed to those of us on the periphery. It seemed also in retrospect that he was happiest with Miami, that this was really his top option with or without LeBron. Was it tempting to go to Houston? Sure. But I think the way he's matured here as a player and as a person, Miami represented the very best option for him. So I think there was more to it. I think everybody wants to take the pressure and look at it as him maybe being scared off or something along those lines, and that's what they want to focus on. But the reality is, I think that Miami was and is the better option for Chris.
Yeah, you know, I think this whole big three, the big three thing is just kind of this in fashion kind of thing that's going on right now. Everybody thinks you need three, like, superstars to win a championship, and maybe that's the case, but I know that this always hasn't been the case in the NBA, where players are just trying to force their way out of City X to get to City Z to play with players 2 and 3, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So, the fact that Bosh watched LeBron go to Cleveland and decided, and when everybody in the media was saying, oh, Bosh is probably going to Houston now, for him to independently make up his own mind and stay in Miami just shows how much of an independent and free thinker he really is, especially in this day and age. Maybe I'm giving him too much credit here. Maybe it's just he didn't feel like moving and didn't want to deal with the pressure in Houston. But I really do think, like, players always talk about how they don't listen to the media, but you know LeBron listens to the media, and that in some, you definitely get a sense that that almost affects the way he's thinking, you know.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Right.
I agree 100%. Of all the superstar players, he's the most easily manipulated. I know that sounds kind of, you know, salty
on
my part, but yeah, but I that's what I'd say.
And I think Dwight Howard just doesn't even care, like really doesn't care about what the media is saying, and that's why he continues to get beat up, because he kind of has that mentality, and then which isn't really respected by the media. And then you got a guy like Kevin Durant, who's kind of the hipster of the media that just kind of does everything ironically almost, which is why I don't think he's going to leave Oklahoma City, even though he might want to, because he knows that that's a train wreck over there. He'll just stay just because he's a hipster and he wants to stay. Because the dude wears, like, gloves for fashion reasons. Like, if he's not a hipster, I don't know what is.
So could you say the same thing about Dwayne Wade then, the way he kind of, like, played up the visits to Chicago in 2010?
I think that was more as leverage. That's kind of how I always saw it, because in 2010 he wasn't there was no guarantee that Bosch or and certainly not LeBron was going to sign in Miami. So I think he was playing that whole thing up as, okay, we can't be on a 15-win team anymore. Michael Beasley's not going to cut it. You can't just trade for Sean Marion. This isn't going to work. You need to get me some real players or I'm going to Chicago. And I think that's almost... I always just assume that was leverage. And
really?
I also think that, like, Chris Bosh, maybe he never... If you're a free agent, you have to meet with other teams. That's how I always saw it. Or it doesn't hurt you to go at least talk to other teams. You know, the Miami Dolphins are, like, the team that players talk to and coaches talk to just to get a leverage hold. You know what I mean? So... If you're a free agent, you're not really playing your cards if you don't talk to another team. Especially, and if you're Wade, the smart team to talk to is Chicago.
It doesn't hurt to get flown out to Miami in mid-July either, so that you can sign. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to go to Joe Stonecrab in July, and on the team's dollar, I don't see why not as a free agent. But, exactly. You know, that's just me. But I always got the feeling that Wade was kind of like a... You know, to go Monty Python on you, all wink, wink, nudge, nudge with the media about it. Like, there was no intention for him. Like, I mean, I was legitimately scared when he took a second meeting with Chicago. I was like, wow, this is it. I mean, to go from the possibility, the tantalizing possibility of getting Wade, Bosch, and LeBron, and then to go to, well, now we don't have anything but Michael Beasley and Mario Chalmers and Christ knows what else at this point. I don't even remember what else was on the roster at that point, but I always thought that him going to Chicago... Oh, yeah, well, that's right. Wasn't he a free agent? I think, didn't he?
Oh, he was a free agent, yep, that's right. And so was Haslam, you're right, yep.
So, I mean, who knows what we would have had to build on. I mean, I can't imagine what kind of a team that would have been in Miami. But I always got the feeling that him going to Chicago was kind of like, you know, I'm just messing around here. There was the whole Chris Bosh filming the whole process of meeting with all these other teams and everything else. But, I mean, we can't ignore the fact that Wade and Bosh have the same agent, and there was probably some collusion going on there as far as signing a deal in Miami. I mean, I think the whole... I mean, he wasn't even in town, Chris Bosh, this past year. He wasn't even in town. Right. So his agent was taking phone calls from Houston. In the meantime, he's somewhere in Africa at this point.
Was it in India or Africa?
Was it one or the other? I can't remember.
Not Asian in America.
World Tour, yeah, the Bosh World Tour runs to so many places, I can't keep track of it. But anyway, I don't think you can, as far as I'm concerned, you can never be too effusive in your praise of Chris Bosh, because, I mean, as I've mentioned before, I love him. His decision to come here was a major turning point for the Heat organization. And I love his personality. You know, you remember what I wrote a couple of weeks ago about how unusual he is as a team leader, as a superstar athlete and everything else. He's so introspective. He thinks things out. I think the way a lot of people should and not a lot of people do, and certainly not a lot of superstar athletes. So his whole thought process behind whether he should go to Houston or stay in Miami, as far as I'm concerned, if he wants to admit that there's pressure, I'm fine with it. I understand it, because, as you know, you and I have talked about, there was a huge media circus there for the last 4 years. And I think everybody should just let him off the hook. For anybody that disparages the name of Chris Bosh, I think you're ridiculous. He should do whatever the hell he wants to, and he's perfect in my eyes.
He's absolutely perfect. And I think there's a transparency there is about him. And I think part of the reason is because his publicists or his agents or whoever runs the show for Bosh, Bosh runs that show because he's so smart, and those people trust him to not say stupid things. Where you might have somebody like as big as a superstar as LeBron James is, he kind of needs people to help control his image. Where Chris Bosh was, like you said, third banana in Miami, is not a household name in a lot of senses, other than in Miami, where I think he is. it's he can afford to be a little bit more transparent. And when he says something like, can you imagine if LeBron said he didn't want to stay in Miami or something because of the pressure, which would be BS. But really, there hasn't. I feel like there's not nearly as much pressure as there was. And like he's kind of getting a pass in Cleveland, but
right.
That's like, no, I could go on for
so
an hour.
So many different levels, yeah, exactly.
But I just think you're right. Bosch is just very introspective. There was a quote in that Berger piece where he was just talking about how he knows how to get to work and he knows the shortcuts to get to work if there's a traffic jam. And that's right. Such a Chris Bosch thing to say in an interview, where he thinks about his lifestyle, where he thinks about everything. Just it's not money and it's not basketball at all. That's not all that matters to him. He wants to do. Everything comes into play. He's about his lifestyle. And I'm talking about him like I know him, but just getting a sense of him from the last 5 years. He's really just about the entire package.
You said it perfectly, though. I mean, you said it. There is a transparency to mm-hmm. him, and something, an openness to him, and the way he expresses himself. First and foremost, there's a willingness. Maybe a lot of players are, but they lack the education or mm-hmm. the ability to express themselves as clearly. But he has that perfect combination. Not only is he introspective enough and willing, but he knows how to respond to questions. He's thought these things through. He knows how to express himself in a variety of different ways. He can be angry. He can be bitter. He can be honest. He can be funny. He can be sarcastic. I mean, you know, it's perfect. I mean, I really do appreciate him as a media person. You have to appreciate the way he speaks to everybody and the way he's open about everything. And that word transparency is perfect for him. So I really agree with you 100%.
Likewise, what do you think about Dwayne Wade? I've always felt like he's been transparent's not the real word there, but he's very because there's a certain character about him that he really plays up as the chip on his shoulder kind of guy, like the ultimate guy with a chip on his shoulder, and I think he plays up that identity a lot. But it's consistent, right? Like the thing we got with LeBron was a lack of consistency. But we bash LeBron now because he's gone. There's a lot of things I liked about LeBron. I liked how when he was having fun, nobody was having more fun than LeBron. But with Wade, it seems like even when he's having fun, he's pissed off about something. But at least that's consistent, right?
Yeah. It's hard to peg. I think he's also one of those guys that there's an ironic way that he deals with the media. Like he knows that he's on display there, and he knows that he has everybody's rapt attention, and he uses it however he wants to. Like I think he manipulates the system very well, and I think he is also very honest and open, and he does have the ability to express himself, but I think it's actually improved over the course of his career since he first came to Miami. I was noticing, I can't recall at one point over the offseason when he was answering questions, I think about the whole departure of James and moving forward with the franchise and everything else, and I was kind of taken aback because he's just become so much more polished in his approach. So that he's taken that kind of irony with which he deals with the system, and he's just perfected how to play it up the way he wants to. So you're right that there's a chip on his shoulder. There's a little bit of anger to him there. Maybe it's just that he had so much to prove when he first came into the league and nobody knew what kind of a player he would be. You know, he was out of position. Then kind of being thrust into the spotlight as the sidekick to Shaquille O'Neal. You know, he's had an interesting and very varied up and down career. So, I mean, maybe he's just... And he's always been in the spotlight as far as like his personal life. You know, there's his his first marriage, you know, his kids, the public divorce and custody battles. I mean, even his relationship, his most recent relationship, the marriage. But then there was the illegitimate child. Which I mean, I know we're going into very varied topics here, but I think he understands that he's going to be victimized or played out, and people are going to criticize him. And at this point, he just doesn't care. He's just going to do whatever he wants to because at least the city, the fans, and the organization appreciates everything he's done, and so that's all he needs.
What stood out to me was a couple things. When he took Andrew Wiggins aside...
Yes!
And that wasn't a camera move. It didn't even look like he noticed the camera was there. For once in the last 4 years. He just really wanted to talk to Andrew Wiggins because he went into him right as that last buzzer sounded. And his comments about when Kevin Garnett did that, and to remember something like that clearly meant a lot to him, even though it was Kevin Garnett. and that relationship may have gotten a little bit rocky, or at least uber competitive over the last few years. But I love those comments afterwards. And then he had a recent Q&A on NBA.com, I believe it was, that I wrote about on All You Can Heat, a pretty lengthy article, even though I was just kind of pulling quotes and analyzing them. The way he went about talking about the evolution of his game, I thought there was a level of introspectiveness there that we haven't really seen. There's a full kind of talk, like a talk through thought. A lot of times as athletes, you kind of get the beginnings of thoughts, I feel like, in quotes, but not really an entire thought process. And I thought there was an entire thought process in that Q&A that I thought was really interesting. A lot of it was about how he has learned to grow since his rookie year, and how what the game of basketball kind of means to him, and all these things. I just thought, like, okay, this guy really does think things through. He's not always just turning on SportsCenter and seeing somebody rally against him and then just saying, okay, that's my bulletin board material for the game. Let me go out and just try to score, 26 points tonight. I don't know.
No, that's great. I mean, this team, I've written about it. I know people who will listen to this will think that we're crazy, and it's weird that we're taking this nostalgic trip down memory lane here, but, there's just a much greater sense of honesty to this team. There was always something about LeBron. I can appreciate what you're saying, and I felt that too about, his happiness. It seemed sincere at some points, but there was also those points when he wasn't happy that you never knew quite where you stood with him. He could be very immature or in addressing his feelings. I know it's tough. We're playing a psychologist here, so it's very weird, but I can appreciate this team much, much more with him off of it. And I know that sounds ludicrous because, yes, we're not as great a team as we are with LeBron, but as far as people are concerned, as far as like the overall... I'm not sure. I'm missing the word here.
The last 4 years, this team has been an arena-style rock band. It has just been absolutely like the U2 on tour, and LeBron James was Bono, and there was not getting within 50 feet of Bono. It just wasn't happening. And now this team is a punk rock band playing club gigs on the stage that's on the same level as the people in the pit. And that's basically what's happening now. And we're closer to them. We kind of feel what they're feeling now. We get it. It's post-LeBron, the LeBrocalypse, like I've been calling it lately.
Ooh. Yeah, that's right. Have you ever seen the movie Almost Famous?
Oh, great movie.
Okay. It is probably my favorite movie of all time.
Oh, top five of mine.
Yeah, yeah. In thinking about, Russell when he's in Topeka, and he just wants to be real Topeka people. That's his ability to connect with fans. This team now connects with fans at a much greater level than they have over the last 4 years because of that whole arena, circus, whatever insanity that's been taking over the team. So now with LeBron gone, there's just a bit more authenticity to the team, and I could see them. Again, they're not going to be playing, huge 100,000-plus stadiums, but yeah, like you said, those local gigs with just an acoustic set, and it's going to be much, much more intimate, and that's what we're looking for here. So I think, there's just something better about the team, more organic, more wholesome, and that's how I feel about it.
And when that guitar solo hits, and just keep going with these band references, I feel like the cheers from the fans are just going to be more real, not as... Yeah. Forced. And God, can we get rid of that freaking Seven Nation Army thing? I don't know how that keeps happening. Everybody hates it, but it keeps happening.
Yeah, and I've seen it everywhere now. Like, it's all over the place. College football.
Yes, has any chant ever been more hated yet more duplicated? First of all, I'm not even sure why we hate it. Maybe it's just like people just. First of all, the song has been played out since when it came out in like. What, 2001, 2002? I don't even remember. Yeah. It's been like 10 years. And so the song's played out. It'd be like people singing along to Dream On, like just all the time. It was just like, no, I don't want to hear this anymore. I get it's a great song, but no, please stop.
Are they still playing it at the American Airlines Arena? They are, right?
Dream On or?
No, I don't think they're playing Dream On. Are they playing Seven Nation or they are, right? Occasionally?
Yes.
Or is it just kind of like, does it build up from the crowd where they start?
It's more so that I think I think the arena plays the dun dun dun, like the drum beat.
Okay.
I don't know if they actually play like the bass of it anymore. I mean, it's hard to tell on television, but maybe the people that are going to the games are very different people than the people that are sitting at home tweeting about the games. So,
that's very likely. That's very likely.
Since the ticket prices are still pretty high.
Well, I guess we should probably move forward from talking about bands and movies and actually look at the past week in Heat basketball.
I guess.
If you want to do an Almost Famous podcast, we could probably watch the movie and do like a podcast just in the movie. Have you seen? I'll just one more thing about it. Have you seen the untitled version of it?
No.
That's like the There's a version of it that's longer than the original cinematic release that has a whole bunch of deleted scenes.
Oh, those can only be amazing.
The Miami Herald movie critic Renee Rodriguez, who I think does an excellent job.
She is great.
Okay, and not only that, but he seems to be a true comic book geek like I am. So every time like an X-Men movie or a Spider-Man movie comes out, he gives it like a real good, nuanced perspective. So I love it. But his line about this untitled version of the Almost Famous DVD was, the only thing wrong about this one is that now I'll never appreciate the original cinematic release as good or as much because this one is perfect.
Wow.
And it was like an extra 30 minutes of scenes there, and it is absolutely perfect. I think it's one of the finest movies of all time.
Okay, one more non-Heat related point. Have you been watching Gotham since you're a comic?
Yes, I have.
Okay, we might need another pod on Gotham. We might need to get into that. Are you caught up all the way? I'm a couple episodes that I haven't caught up.
I just finished watching this Monday's episode. And,
so you are caught up. Okay.
Now, one of the things, and I don't know if you've seen this, but if I've been watching them on demand, not necessarily when they air on Mondays, and they keep showing this commercial that has scenes that either are from an episode that already took place and for whatever reason I didn't see that scene, or they're taking place in a future episode.
But you're watching it on demand and you're still watching the commercials. You know you could like fast forward through those.
No, you cannot.
That's not true. I watch them on demand and I fast forward through them.
Well, I don't know what cable system you have, sir, but on my piece of crap cable system, you're stuck with it. It says fast forward and other, I can't remember the exact verbiage.
Oh, wait, no, you're right. I can't fast forward it. I'm thinking of another show I watch that I record and I don't DVR. You're correct, David.
Okay. Because yeah, it's the same thing when I watch The Walking Dead. It's the same thing, too. Okay. Like a few years ago, like the first few seasons, yeah, you could fast forward through all that crap. Now, I'm stuck watching commercials over and over again for Hell on Wheels and Mad Men and everything else that they've got going on there. It's like, I get it. You have lots of TV shows. And you want me to watch all of them, you know? So I watch that. I watch The Flash. I watch pretty much anything comic book related.
Wait, The Flash started?
Yes.
How many episodes is that in? It's only be like two or
three. I think the sixth one just aired last night.
The Flash was my favorite superhero and favorite basketball player growing up.
All right, let me ask you a question. I know based on your age what the right answer should be, but then your preferred Flash is whom?
I don't know, the cartoon character.
I'm sorry, because maybe you're not as comic book geeky as I am then, because you know there have been different people who have worn the costume at one point, right?
No, I didn't know that.
Oh.
I like just flicking through the comic books that were kind of like left over from like in my house. Yeah.
You're talking to the wrong guy. I mean,
Oops.
There's Jay Garrick was the golden age, you know, early 50s and 60s, I think, Flash. He's the guy that has a helmet, and he has, like, perpetually whitish kind of hair and, like, gray at his temples. And then there's the one that everybody really loves the most, which is the Silver Age Flash, which is Barry Allen. And then there's Wally West, which is the one that was the later era Flash, and he's the one that's in the Justice League cartoon. And, I mean, that's the one that I think a lot of younger people probably say is the preferred Flash, but
that's you're in waters that are much too deep for me.
Sorry, buddy.
But my favorite Flash, I think, was the guy that played it in 2001, Dwayne Wade. Well, that wasn't until that really wasn't. I that was a good try there by me, but and that wasn't 2001. That was 2004, 2003-ish. Well, when did Shaq name him the Flash? 2005.
That would have been
2005, right? Yeah. So, okay, so the one in 2005, played by Dwayne Wade. He's less flashy now.
Was it 2000? I don't want to say it was 2004, because he was drafted in 2003.
Right.
He played that rookie season, and then we acquired Flash in 2004. So that must have been when it happened.
We acquired Shaq in 2004.
Right, and then we didn't advance to the finals because of Dwayne Wade's rib injury.
Right.
In 2004-05, at the end of 2005, we didn't advance to the finals, but then in 2005-06, that's when we won the championship.
So it really depends at what point in the season Shaq dubbed him Flash, I guess.
I think it was right away. I think it was,
did he?
He's Flash to my Superman.
Which really didn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, kind of. I mean
I guess the same universe, correct?
Yeah, DC but, Comics, Flash.
But it's not
faster.
Like Superman needed a Flash. It's not like he kind of rolled around with Flash all the time. It's not like he's not the, like, you know, Batman to the Rob, or Robin to my Batman is like a thing that makes sense, but Flash to my Superman, it's not, you know what I mean?
But, you know, if you want to take it a step further, in comic books and in super teams and in regular sports teams, it's a group effort. And, you know, there's the Justice League. There's, you know, sometimes there are just cosmic level dangers that have to be addressed as a team. And no one superhero, not Superman or anybody else, can handle them. And that's why it needs a team effort.
We need to
and
do Shaquille a piece on which player on that 2006 finals team was which character from the Justice League then.
I'm going to tell you this right now. Actually, last year, I wrote a piece. One of the first things I ever wrote was on why it's stuck in my craw on how people were referring to the Heat as the Super Friends. And to me, being more of a Marvel Comics guy, I saw LeBron James as Captain America, I think. No, I'm sorry. LeBron James as Thor. I saw Chris Bosh as Iron Man and Dwayne Wade as Captain America, the original Heat player, like the original Avenger, et cetera, et cetera. And it was one of the first things I wrote, like 2,000 words on why the Heat should be Marvel Comics characters and not DC characters.
You need to send me a link to that.
I will. I'll send it right in. I don't even know what we're talking about anymore. Are we still playing basketball? Are we still talking about the season?
Are we doing a podcast?
And we might. We might.
So the last couple games, the Heat, they finally got off their little 3-game skid. I'm pretty sure we called it. I think we were excited after they beat the Mavericks, I think was the peak excitement of the season. But we kind of said in the immediate podcast, I think following that was, okay, this is great. It was a 3-game winning streak, but there are going to be losing streaks to the season. We got to be prepared for them. I just wasn't prepared to be pretty much right there. Like,
if I recall correctly, we were supposed to win against Indiana and I forgot what the fall. Oh, Atlanta. We were supposed to beat them. Yeah. And then you were concerned about the trap game on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And we did lose that one. And then we were definitely going to try and win on against Brooklyn, which is the only one that we actually wound up winning. So we were wrong on many levels there.
So keep listening.
it's very hard to make a guess as to what this team is going to do. I know that Wade tweaked his hamstring against the Pacers, and if you want to look at it, you know, going back to their first loss of the 3-game losing streak, I think Chris Bosh struggled that game. He got foul trouble early, correct?
Yes, but let me ask you this. Do you think there's a little bit of a sentiment, I think, among Heat fans that think that this is another maintenance thing? Do you think it's a maintenance thing, or do you think it's he really did annoy his hamstring, let's keep him out, and because it's early in the season? Because I feel like he could play.
What's the difference? If he's sitting out for the next, you know, or sitting out for three games, and it's all part of some quote-unquote maintenance program, but then...
So last year in the maintenance program, if he woke up with, like, a knot in his stomach or something, they would sit him out, right? So if he just kind of felt funny waking up, he was sitting out, and there was some pre-planned games that he was just not going to play. So, but this season, I feel like it's not going to be that. It's not going to be, I'm waking up and I'm a little sore, but I'll play anyway. But with this hamstring, it's like a legitimate injury. It's just one of those injuries where you don't play through in the regular season, but you play through in the playoffs when every game really counts. And I think that's what's going on. What do you think?
Okay. I could see that. I mean, he did look like he was limited against Indiana when he originally hurt himself, and that probably contributed to the loss, along with Chris struggling a little bit from the floor. So I don't see why not sit out the Atlanta game. You know, they were struggling, and all of a sudden they just went crazy and started shooting lights out. I don't think anybody perceived that or anybody guessed that would happen. So as far as Wade is concerned, I think he's just going to have little minor things come up over the course of the season, and he'll probably wind up sitting out bunches of games rather than sitting out a game, yes, a game, no, a game, yes, a game, no, like he did last year. You know, every time there was a back-to-back, he would sit out one of them. You know, I don't think that's going to be the case this year.
So back to those losses, I think we talked about in the most depressing podcast of all time how this team lacked an identity, and where if this team wasn't getting the shots to fall, it was just going to be a complete disaster. And I think you and I both saw that immediately with just this personnel on this roster. That's what we saw in those three games. When Wade is out, when Bosch is just ice cold, and when nobody else can really step up, and even when they did step up, I mean, Shabazz Napier stepped up a little bit. Ennis would step up in spurts. Mario Chalmers, 18 points, you know, 23 points in one game. But none of those players can carry a team to a win. They can just be like that third guy, and that's what we always talk about is the Heat. If they have Bosch and they have Wade, they have an opportunity to win, and if that third guy steps up, then they're going to win that game probably. But we basically saw how bad this team could be, right? I think it doesn't really get much worse than that, especially considering when they're going up against some formidable big man, and nobody's shot is falling. It's just like, it's a train wreck, and it's hard to watch almost.
I mean, I guess theoretically it could be worse than that. I mean, I've struggled to think how. They were solid teams, but I don't think, let's say we catch Cleveland at a point when they're running on all cylinders, and then we are in the exact opposite mode where Chris Bosch is, you know, not playing well, or he's ice cold, like you said, and Dwayne's out, and Lou Wall is having a bad game, and McRoberts is hurt, like we experienced over the weekend. It could get theoretically much worse.
It could get worse in a differential way, but the Heat wouldn't, like, the Heat wouldn't
to,
be,
you know, 79
yeah,
or something
the Heat like wouldn't technically be playing worse. Because we got away with playing some lackluster opponents that we still lost to, but yeah, I mean, I guess maybe the difference would be they wouldn't be playing worse; they would just be playing a better opponent, I guess.
Okay, I'll give you that. I mean, it would feel worse for anybody watching.
It would feel worse,
yeah,
especially if it was against Cleveland.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, hell, even that Indiana loss was really demoralizing.
Yeah. That was like losing to the Lakers, I think, because we hate. Like, just because the Pacers are supposed to be awful.
Right, and yeah, exactly. And I mean, with half the roster, and I mean, a bunch of guys there in the starting lineup that I've never even heard of, mm-hmm. that look like they're probably, you know, it's either the Pacers or the Sixers at this point. And it's like, and they whooped us pretty good. I mean, they really came in there and they limited us. You know, the ball rotation that had looked so perfect against Dallas was non-existent. Nobody was hitting with any kind of frequency. It looked really shaky. But you're right. I think we just have to, if we're saying that we're not sure what Miami's identity is, maybe this is it. Maybe it's just going to be a team that's going to struggle for a lot of games, and they're going to have some really great performances. And if Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh are hitting consistently, then they could be great. Like, they have a high ceiling, but they also have a pretty low floor as well. And so maybe that's just the reality of this version of the Heat, because as you've mentioned on a number of occasions, that's Lou Alding is not that guy. He's not even necessarily going to be an adequate third scorer. I mean, they've gone on the record, you know, prior to that great back to back that Deng had, where he was great against Minnesota, and then he was even better the next day against Dallas. You know, there was an article in the paper where they're saying, look, we need Luol to be that guy. We need him to be that solid third scorer. He wasn't that guy over the last four games. He's been very inconsistent. His shot seems to be struggling. So I don't know if there was just like a great chemistry there between him and Wade, but it seemed to be missing with Wade out. So there's nobody. I mean, that's not to say that they didn't get some great contributions from, like you said, Chalmers stepped up, Sean Williams stepped up. Maybe you got a couple of the guys like, you know, Shabazz stepped up in spurts, Ennis in spurts, but even both of those guys, they struggled as well. I mean, there were key turnovers there. You alluded to this. You wrote a piece about how Ennis struggled, and he's played 5 minutes. I forgot what game it was now. I can't remember. Was that against Atlanta? Yeah.
Yeah.
Where he started?
Where he started, he played 6 minutes.
Not even. I wound up writing the piece. You had mentioned it in another post, but I wound up looking at exactly what he did wrong. And he got taken out after 5 minutes. 5 minutes. You'd think that maybe, you know, looking back at it, it might ruin his confidence, but he was able to bounce back from it. So maybe Spoelstra knows what he's doing in the sense that he's like, look, I gotta yank you out of the lineup, but it's for your own good, and this is going to be a lesson for you. Yeah. You're not ready to assume the starting position.
I think Spoelstra has absolutely nailed the rotations with what he's got. And I'll get to this, but there's one thing that really is reassuring to me about this team, and there's another thing that is really not so much reassuring for this team. But I think before I get to that, though, Spoelstra has, I think, nailed the rotations, and he's got a short leash on things because he's still trying to figure out what this team really is. For example, Shannon Brown played, I think, 7 minutes as the starting shooting guard and literally fell down on a coverage and gave up a wide-open three to Kyle Korver, I believe it was Kyle Korver, and never was back on the court after that game. He hasn't played since, even though Wade's been out. And I think Shannon Brown's basically played his way out of the rotation. And I've mentioned this before, there's going to be a couple guys that are going to just get squeezed out of this thing. And it looks like one of them is Shannon Brown. And another one might be Danny Granger here, if he doesn't pick it up. But one thing that's really reassuring is that this team is still not 100% and has not played a game 100% in terms of health. We haven't had 100% Mick Roberts. We've yet to see. It's been 4 games since we've seen Wade and Bosch going at it 100%. This team's still not completely where it can be, and maybe this team doesn't get there. Maybe this team is just a team that has some older dudes on it that are just not going to be. This team might not ever be 100%, but Mick Roberts will get there, and I think that's going to be a huge thing. How that works out with Sheldon Williams and Mick Roberts at the power forward rotation, we'll see. But there's also an argument to be made that Mick Roberts should be starting, and maybe Luol Deng comes in on the second unit, and Sean Williams starts at small forward, since Deng doesn't really space the floor. And when you have Wade and Deng in the lineup at the same time, you're not spacing the floor. Or Cole. When you think about it, between the point guard, shooting guard, and small forward, none of them are spacing the floor. And if you have at least, you're not putting Mario Chalmers in at starting point guard. Spoelstra pretty much shown that he doesn't want to do that. So if you have Cole, Wade, and Williams, maybe you're spacing the floor a little bit. But I'm getting into a whole other thing. The thing that really worries me about this team is the lack of a big man that this team has. And the center position has been healthy. Chris Anderson's kind of back. Udonis Haslam's been fine, as fine as he's going to be. Bosch has been fine. This team does not have a big man, and it doesn't have the weapons to make up for that in other areas. And this team won't get far in the playoffs if they have to play a real big man. And that's what really, really worries me, because they need to make a move, because this whole doubling the guy as soon as he gets the ball in the post isn't going to work. They're just not fast enough on their closeouts. They're getting beating. Their perimeter defense is not good enough to get away with that. That's the thing that really, really worries me about this team.
But that's not a realistic option, though. I mean, is there anybody available that they could, like, ideally, I mean, okay, maybe we should preface this by saying there's probably ideal options, and then there are options that are much more realistic. You know, what's an ideal option for somebody? Somebody who could handle the low post but also be an adequate passer, you know, like Joakim Noah, I guess?
Oh, for sure. I mean, if we could have Marc Gasol, it would be terrific. But
okay.
I think what we need right now is just a guy to go in there for 8 minutes a game, just throw out a big man when he's just getting on a roll, and just take out Bosch or move Bosch to the power forward spot. And I was watching the New Orleans Pelicans last night, and they just have such great versatility with their two front guys, with Anthony Davis, Omer Asik, and Ryan Anderson. They could basically go small because they have the definition of a stretch four with Anderson. They have Anthony Davis who could play the five or the four seamlessly and just as dominantly. And then they have Asik who can basically, he's just a rim protector and almost a non-factor on offense, but that's fine because that's his role. Because you have Anderson, who's basically a non-factor on defense, but is just a perfect stretch four. So when they're going against bigger lineups, they can stretch them out or they can match them. When they're going against smaller lineups, you know, same thing, but vice versa. But the Heat don't have that. They got one definition, and it's they got to stretch opposing teams because Sean Williams is playing the power forward spot, and that's about it. If they could just get one guy that they could play 8 to 10 minutes a game, just to have a little bit more versatility, and Chris Anderson used to be that guy for us, and he's just not that guy anymore. I don't know if you've noticed this, but he is not the same player as he was even a year ago.
No, he was solid in spurts against. Against Brooklyn, but no, he's been shaky. He's been more shaky than he's been solid,
yes.
I think.
And he's missing his rotations, he's missing his assignments, right. And it's because he's slow. It's because he's not getting lift. There's no right. lift on those blocks or those putbacks or those dunks or anything. It's the beginning of the season, David. It's not going to get better.
No. But I mean, what's the option then? I mean, you bring up a good point with that front line in New Orleans. I mean, I guess ideally you would have Sean Williams slide down to the small forward position, which is what you mentioned. But I don't see Deng being a reserve. I don't think he'd embrace that, knowing that he's got an opt out at the end of this season, and he's his deal is only a 2-year deal. I don't think he would embrace that as easily as say Mario Chalmers has.
I wouldn't be worried if he opted out. I like Deng, I do, but. Is the difference between him and Williams that much at this point? I mean, he's a much better defender than Sean Williams, but Sean Williams will get a hang of it after he gets used to things, I think.
And he's being put in a very tough spot because he winds up, if the center position is, the opposing centers are a decent scorer, he's covering them specifically so that Chris Bosh doesn't get into foul trouble.
Right.
Like, I mean, he guarded Al Jefferson. He guarded Dwight Howard. I mean, that's totally unfair. Nobody can guard those guys, and certainly not somebody as undersized as Sean Williams.
And I'm okay with Sean Williams being the starting power forward. That's fine. But they just need the guy to spell Bosh at center and move Bosh to power forward. It used to be Anderson again, but it's not. And I don't know if the answer is Kim Birch. He's probably not ready. I don't know if Justin Hamilton can take a step, but I see him as a power forward. He's really not. I don't think you could play him without somebody else, like a good frontline defender, because otherwise they just get torn up in the middle. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, the obvious answer was Greg Stiemsma in free agency, but that ship has sailed. The Raptors aren't really playing him. Maybe on December 15th, when he becomes tradable, the Heat could trade somebody. Maybe do a Granger for Stiemsma swap. I think that would be good for both sides.
Yeah, sure, why not?
just somebody bigger than who they have now that can actually jump. That's all they need. It's not somebody like, I think, who's this? Jalen Rose says this. All they got to do is be able to walk and chew gum at the same time.
Oh, man.
Somebody to throw out a big body, just so that they're not just walking right towards the rim.
But those guys they're like a hot commodity. You know, if they're that big and they can be decent enough, I mean, otherwise. You probably have somebody similar to that in Hamilton. They need to be better than Hamilton, at least defensively they do.
I wonder if they can sign a guy from Europe.
Who will be quick enough to adjust and have the sufficient hops to block shots. I mean, if that guy was available, I'm willing to bet he'd already be on a roster by now. I mean, the Heat don't necessarily have the best scouting department, or if they do have a good scouting department, they just don't utilize it as efficiently as, say, San Antonio does. So I don't know that, I think they've been burnt by so many different European players over the course of Riley's tenure that he doesn't want to go that route anymore. So I don't see them picking up some, incredible 7-foot Yugoslavian or something like that,
I mean, I'm looking at Real GM's lists of free agents right now. There's a guy named Vyacheslav Kravtsov, and he plays for, oh my god, I can't even read this. I'm assuming Russia somewhere, but he's 6'11", 254, he's 27 years old.
Sign him, make it happen.
Well, he's only averaging 0.85 rebounds per game, so I don't know what that means.
No, he's done. D-League,
but they just sign him, whatever. Are they using any, I love Andre Dawkins. Send him to the D-League. They're not using him.
Well, he was actually great. What game was it that he got some burn? Was it against Brooklyn?
It was against Brooklyn.
Yeah. And he was great, right? I mean,
yeah, I like him. I think they should play him more, but they're not.
Yeah, because that's legitimate shooting. He popped a couple of three-pointers against Brooklyn, right? And, I mean, there was some spacing there. I guess he had some – I want to say that he actually drew a charge and that he was actually okay defensively. I don't think he was as much of a sieve as you might perceive that he would be. But, I mean, he's a rookie. He's fighting for playing time. Those are the kind of guys that are hungry everywhere else across the NBA. Those are the guys that have something to prove. But in Miami, it's like, sorry, you're not going to be able to actually work your way up at this point. So don't even bother.
I think he would be. I think he's got the potential to be a 3-and-D guy. But how about this? I got two names for you.
Okay.
Dexter Pittman Part 2.
No.
Okay. No. All right. Never mind. And Aaron Gray played for the Kings last year. I mean, he's 29 years old. He's not the young guy, but. Aaron Gray is a 7-footer, 270 pounds. Just give him a spot on the roster. He's got, you know, he's been in the league for since 2007. Like, that's 7 years. Just play him. Why not, right? Like, I don't know.
I mean, isn't that the equivalent then of like Shannon Brown's occupying a roster spot?
Yes, but we don't need Shannon Brown, so get rid of Shannon Brown. If you cut Shannon Brown, right, and I think his deal's only partially guaranteed. Cut Shannon Brown and bring in Aaron Gray. Done. At least you have a guy that you can use because they're favoring Dawkins over Brown. They're going to get squeezed out. They're almost redundant of each other because there's so many guards on this roster right now. And Spo's not really in love with any of them except for Wade and Napier pretty much. But
saying though is that Aaron Gray and maybe Chris Anderson could be considered the equivalent of Shannon Brown just at a center position. Like guys that can contribute but aren't going to really be good contributors. You know, not anymore. I mean, I don't know what Aaron Gray could possibly do for the Heat that we're not getting from Chris Anderson. I know that you're saying, oh, sign another guy, but we need to sign another guy that's better or represents some kind of an upgrade. Or at least, like Dawkins, represents some kind of potential. And I know I don't want to keep bringing up Kem Birch because I sound like a broken record, but I mean, at least there was some potential there. You know, he was limited offensively. So what? At least there would be some kind of rim block, you know, rim stoppage there, rim protection. You know, some work around the rebounding. There was, you know, those have been glaring weaknesses for Miami. And that's what his strengths were. So, I mean, I'm not the smartest guy in the room. I certainly don't know the most about basketball, but I can't understand why bring a guy on like Shannon Brown or even Justin Hamilton who can space the floor but doesn't do much else when you have a guy like Birch who can possibly contribute. Maybe I'm missing something and you can help me out here?
No, I agree with you. I think the idea with Shannon Brown was that he was going to play when Wade got hurt because he is the most – similar player they can get to Wade in terms of somebody that can handle the ball. And he's a good ball handler. But I think that his defense is so bad that I think Spo just realized he's unplayable. And that's why he hasn't played the last couple games. And that's why Mario Chalmers has got the start at shooting guard. And he realized Ennis could just play that six-man role, which he has in Chalmers' spot. And doing very well, yeah. Thriving almost. Playing better than he was in his previous position as just a backup 2-3 guy.
Right.
So I don't think, and in my predictions piece before the season, I said this won't be the same team. The 15 we have at the beginning of the year won't be the 15 we have at the end of the year. Shannon Brown, I kind of felt like was going to be the guy that was out because I just wasn't really sold on Shannon Brown from who I saw with the Knicks and the Spurs. But I think he's the guy that's going to be out because you saw Dawkins play well, like you mentioned. You see Chalmers and Ennis kind of just slide up in the rotation a little bit, and that's fine when Wade is out. And I don't think Shannon Brown has a role on this team anymore. And I think you're right, Kem Birch does. There's potentially a role for him. My only issue with Birch is that he's so redundant of Haslam because they're both non-factors on offense, and they're just hustle energy guys. But Haslam's, I just don't see the reason of playing him anymore. I'm sorry, I know he's Mr. 305. I know it's Udonis Haslam. He's the cigar at the end of the game right now. There's no reason to play him. We're just bringing Kem Birch.
But then we said that a couple weeks ago, and then he went and had a couple of good back-to-back games where he was adequate against Nikola Pekovic, and then he was good against Tyson Chandler. I mean,
and he'll do that because he doesn't get that much run here and there, but that doesn't matter, you know? It's like, yeah, you're good for 6 to 8 minutes a game here and there. You'll hit a couple mid-range shots, but that's what you're going to do, and I know this, and we've been on this ride for 3 years now. This is what you're going to do. It's going to last a game or two. We're going to say, oh, Haslam's back, and then he disappears, and then he's a non-factor again.
Yeah, so, I hear you.
Play Birch.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I've been on that bandwagon from the beginning, I think. I think it's going to happen.
I really do. I think that's the next move that this team makes, is they release Shannon Brown and bring up Ken Birch.
Okay.
I really do. Okay. I think this happens.
I agree that that's the route they should take, and if they do that, then I am perfectly cool with that decision, because I think there's a potential there. I think fans will love to see that energy. I know guys have been talking about it, but why not? At some point, you're going to have to put faith in unproven commodities and hope that they pan out, or else what have you got to lose? I mean, you've already signed a guy who just happens to be a veteran, and you can't trust that any more than you can a rookie who's actually fighting for something. So why not make the move, and hopefully it pans out. And I think it will. I think we saw enough in those preseason games, dismiss it if you will, but what we saw from Ennis and Napier as far as their advancement in the preseason, that's what we've seen in the regular season as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't see any reason why we wouldn't get that kind of incredible hustle effort. You know, 9 rebounds against the Spurs, was it? I mean, he's, you know, Ken Birch can do the things that we have problems with right now, which are namely rim protection and rebounding. So why not bring him aboard?
You mentioned Napier. I've professed my love for him, but I'm almost stage 5 clinger at this point for Shabazz Napier. I don't know if you got that reference, but I can watch him play the entire game. If he could play all 48 minutes and overtime, I'd be happy. I absolutely love watching his game.
You know, it's hard to think. I don't want to dismiss like the efforts of Norris Cole just yet, but
Norris
you're
Cole
right.
He's on my last nerve. If I had favorite kids, Shabazz Napier's number one in the power ranking. Norris Cole's grounded. Because, first of all, I think we talked about this last year. He has that move where he just goes under the rim and curls up, and that's it. That's his thing, and that's all he can do at this point. He's not spacing the floor. He should be shooting threes like crazy because he's actually decent at it. He's an above-average three-point shooter, and he should be shooting it like crazy, but it seems like when he gets the ball, he doesn't really know what to do with it. He gets the ball and he automatically just starts dribbling forward, and it's maddening. And he just needs Napier's the exact opposite. There's a thought process there. I feel like he's part of the offense. He's a cog in the offense, like the point guard in this particular offense needs to be. Where Cole is just, he's got one move, and it's drive to the lane and try to kick out, and that's about it.
Yeah, Napier took a bunch of threes against Brooklyn.
That's true.
I can't recall exactly how many. I think he hit at least 2, and I think he must have taken around 5 or so.
I think he was 2 for 5. He was either 2 for 4 or 2 for 5.
3 of 6.
Oh, he was. Wow.
3 of 6. I mean, that's him putting it out there. Norris was actually 2 of 5. Okay. And I remember him hitting his first. This is Norris Cole hitting his first and kind of talking to himself, like reminding himself that you got to keep doing this, and, you know. It's weird for a guy that's like a fourth-year veteran at this point and has been at the game's highest stage against the Spurs and, you know, has been there in crucial moments, that he needs to keep reminding himself of these things. But I guess that's just the way Norris is. I don't know if he's just his humble beginnings and that, you know, he was primarily a defensive player at Cleveland State, but, you know, he's got to turn the page, and he hasn't done it, man. And it's,
I know.
It's tough to watch because, you know, there's a lot of desire there. There's a lot of effort, but not enough productivity.
Is he trying to be right now? And that's what I don't get. And I'm on I'm clinging on to him being Patrick Beverley number 2. I am clinging on to that, and I haven't given it up yet. I still think he could do it. Just hit threes and play good on-ball defense. Just be annoying on defense and hit threes. That's all I need you to do, Norris. That's all we need for 24 minutes a game. That's all we need.
He needs to put on like 30 pounds, though. I mean, that's just he's too slight of frame, I think, where I think so. I think Beverly's a little bit more solid.
Okay, he doesn't need to be Patrick Beverly. He just needs to play like Patrick Beverly. Just be annoying. Just like get a few technical fouls here and there. Just jaw at guys, because you're right. He could jaw at guys. He's done it. And just hit threes. Just shoot threes. That's all you got to do. Stop dribbling forward and get the ball.
Well, I think he's just too. He comes across as being too nice a guy. Yeah. I don't think he's that kind of a annoying type player.
Well, he needs to be.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how, what they're going to have to do. Maybe at some point, like Haslam holds him down, and then like they shave a mohawk on him or something like that, and thus ends the fade haircut. But something needs to happen in order to piss that guy off so that he takes it out of the rest of the league. Because right now,
if we can merge Haslam and Cole into one person, to one above average basketball player, that would be perfect. And then we would have the roster spot to just get bring Ken Burch on.
Yes. Not bad. Yeah, I like it. But, you know, I'm not, I don't know Dr. Moreau. I don't know if we've had those kind of advances in biomolecular technology. But, you know, if it could be done, I'm sure that sounds like a great and interesting.
But that's what we need, right? Like, we just need a Haslam-type version of Norris Cole.
I keep thinking. Well, it has
a version of a point guard. That's all, I guess.
Yeah, was it you who kept tweeting out something about needing a point guard on the roster? I don't remember. I want to say that I saw that during one of the last few games that somebody kept saying, "Oh, he need a point guard." But
yes, I was talking about trading for a point guard.
Okay.
If they could do a Cole for a 3-and-D point guard swap, that would be fine. And I think that might be a move that they need to explore at the trade deadline, because if you could. I don't think you need to start Shabazz Napier just yet, but if they can't coach up Cole to do this thing, they need to swap him for somebody that could just shoot threes and play decent defense.
Anybody in mind?
No. And I've been on the ESPN trade machine like crazy, and that's the hard part.
Okay.
So yeah, it's apparently the easiest position to get in the NBA, and the Heat have yet to address it since Jason Williams. Okay. Let's look ahead to these games coming up here, David.
Can I just bring up one more thing?
Absolutely.
Before we move on? The last few games before, if anybody's even still listening at this point, I think, you know, we have to understand that with Wade gone, you cannot just assume that this is the kind of team that's going to lose all the time. I mean, you can't understate the kind of impact that Wade has. And so you look at the last three games, and yeah, we were able to win against Brooklyn, but I think if he's not hurt and McRoberts isn't hurt, this is a completely different attitude about this podcast. Because I think
I'm glad you brought that up. The ball movement is the shots that they create are so much easier when Wade's in the game. It is just right. Not even close, because he just facilitates everything from the post. And it is we were talking about how Bosch was going to facilitate everything from the elbow this season. It turns out Wade's just facilitating from the post. I mean, he's just taken that LeBron spot over.
Yeah,
everything is so much easier when he's in the game. And you're right. That needs to be appreciated. This team, when Wade's not in, they just really struggle just to get easy open looks.
And who would have thought? Because I mean, we look at Chris Bosh, and I guess on paper, maybe on the surface, he seems like he's more versatile as a big man out of position, I guess, but. But, I mean, it looks like Wade is still the focus point of the offense, or at least that's what it seems like over the last few games.
I said he's not going to give it up. I told you, I've been against the number one option wording this entire time. I just said things are going to run through Bosch, and they're going to run through Wade, and both of them are going to have a bigger role, a bigger usage rating if you want to talk numbers. But yeah. Nobody's going to be the number one on this team, because Wade is still Dwayne Wade. He's not going to give up the rock again to Chris Bosh. It's just not going to happen. He didn't have a choice. It was LeBron James, the greatest player in the universe. Had to. He absolutely had to win championships. But now, he's not giving up the rock. It's Dwayne Wade.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, cool. So, looking forward. Clippers on Thursday night, tomorrow night.
They're playing tonight in Orlando. Mm-hmm. They've looked really shaky. They have some interesting options at center that could give us a hard time on, you know, obviously DeAndre Jordan. Is that another game where is Sean Williams going to be able to contain him or limit him? Is he going to have the same kind of impact? You know, because he's a much better version of Tyson Chandler at this point, right? But, mm-hmm. I mean, that's where he does all of his work, is around the rim like that. So, I think the interesting matchup then, if Williams is guarding DeAndre Jordan, or would Chris Bosh guard DeAndre Jordan?
I think this point, Bosh guards Jordan. And they front him, because Jordan's basically a non-factor, anything away 5 feet further away from the basket.
So we're going to get a monster night from Blake Griffin then.
Yes, right? Absolutely. Because Blake Griffin's going to go to Sean Williams. Absolutely. Blake Griffin's the guy to watch. and Chris Paul.
Well, sure. But, I mean, can this be the game then? I mean, I don't think we've heard anything. There have been no confirmation at this point. But I assume Wade will be out there tomorrow. And I'm hoping that McRoberts will be out there as well.
Yeah.
So we might have the team at as close to full strength as we could possibly get at this point in the season. So maybe this will be the wake-up call for Norris. I think that it will. Like, I get the feeling that he's going to rise to the challenge tomorrow against the perceived best point guard in the league. So I think that's a matchup that we win, Cole versus Paul. But Blake Griffin is just going to crush us.
I wonder if they put Luol Deng on Griffin. Because ooh, the
no way.
No, you don't think? I mean, it's better than Sean Williams, right?
Yeah, but I think, well...
And just you hide Sean Williams on the Clippers small forward, whoever it is at that point, if it's Barnes or if it's whoever.
But yeah,
I don't know.
No, it's a good question because it's a possibility. I'd see that maybe Williams could draw Blake Griffin out to the 3-point line when he's on offense, and then right. maybe get him to foul trouble. Hopefully, theoretically. And I think he's done a pretty good job. Look, I know Blake Griffin's a monster. I know he's pretty strong, especially at the power forward position. But, I mean, Williams did a decent job. Well, as decent as can be expected against Howard, mm-hmm. who is probably stronger than Griffin. He did a solid job against Al Jefferson. I mean, he's been challenged to handle some pretty big guys there. So I think you still leave him in there. And that's a good point that to have Luol Deng. Hopefully he'll bounce back and have a big game because I think he can get past Matt Barnes pretty quickly. I mean, if he's the starter tomorrow. So I actually see us beating the Clippers tomorrow. I think the Clippers win. Yeah, I think the Clippers win tonight in Orlando because it's Orlando, and then they come in tomorrow a little jet lags on a back to back, and then the Heat have been off for a couple of days. They get way back at full strength. I think we're going to see. I hate to say it because I know I'm setting myself up here, but I get the feeling that we're going to see more of that Dallas Maverick type performance that we did from a couple weekends ago.
Well, the Clippers, like you're saying, coming off the back-to-back, the Heat are going to push the pace. They're just going to try to win a shootout. That's the chance they have because they're gonna have to surrender those points to Blake Griffin and Chris Paul and those lobs up to DeAndre Jordan. They're just going to have to surrender that. But they're going to have to win a shootout. They're going to have to push the pace and just hope to outlast them for four quarters because they're coming off a back-to-back and the Heat are very rested. Looking forward 2 days later on Saturdays at Orlando. They're getting healthy. They got Victor Oladipo back. They've taken Elfrid Payton out of the starting lineup. I don't know what the Magic are doing anymore. Aaron Gordon's hurt. Do we really need to talk that much about this game? This looks like it's the Magic. It's still the Heat. It's still the Magic. They're still rivals. Even when Jameer Nelson's not there.
Yeah, I mean...
This is a topic.
You've got a back-to-back. Yeah, you've got a back-to-back. Yes. Because the next day against Charlotte back at home. But, we're talking about Orlando, which is, an hour flight or whatever. So, I'd like to say you can't take anybody for granted. Not this Heat team. Hopefully, Wade doesn't re-injure or re-aggravate the hamstring. So Oladipo is an interesting matchup there, but I think that he can get by. Oh, we have to worry about Vucevic? Is that his name? Did I get that right? Yes.
Yeah, we got to worry about him getting 20 points and 20 rebounds.
Yeah. That's a big concern.
I can't stand that guy.
Wow. I have not heard anybody ever say anything bad about him, but I want to hear it. Why do you hate him?
He's one of the most... I didn't say hate. I just said can't stand.
I'm sorry. I'm the one that jumped the gun there, but I could have sworn.
He's overrated. He can't play defense, and he's a rebound. He's a criminal rebounder. He just steals rebounds from teammates. He's not great at boxing out. I feel like he just gets rebounds because he's big and he can jump high. He's athletic, but he's an absolute mess on defense, and I think we're just gonna tear him up like we always do. And everybody says, "Oh, that guy kills us." Vucevic kills us. Not really, because in the past, LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and even Bosch have had their way. Chalmers have had their way against the Magic, and Vucevic is not a good defender. He's just not. He's a bad defender. So I think the reason I can't stand him, I like him in terms of we're competing against him, but I went to college in Orlando for a long time, and he was the second coming of Dwight Howard. And as far as Orlando fans are concerned, and he's just not even close. I don't know.
Yeah,
I have a resentment from living in Orlando for 4 years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so you were obviously much more aware of what the vibe is. But I've even gotten that sense from, like, Twitter and stuff like that when, you know, as far as Orlando fans, and they do seem to love this guy unnecessarily long. I mean, I can't understand it. I mean, maybe it's just like, you know, every fan base has some kind of ridiculous allegiance to a player on the roster.
But we don't.
I'm sorry?
We don't, right?
I think it's Mr. Haslam.
It is,
right?
Definitely. It's absolutely Haslam.
Okay.
That's what I was going at right there.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, this one is the dreaded trap game, but I guess we have a good chance of winning this if we're focused on that. I mean, look, it's a tough week because Charlotte, you know, they beat us, you know, 1 of 4 wins for them so far, and then on Tuesday of next week, you've got Golden State. I know I'm jumping ahead here, but
I mean,
every one of these matchups represents, every one of these games has interesting matchups that could dictate the flow of the game. It could be, you know, terrible. I mean, who anticipated Indiana, as depleted as they were, having their way with us offensively, defensively, everything, just controlling everything at the pace about the game. So I certainly don't think the Magic represent that kind of threat. I don't think they're that strong defensively where they could just bog us down. So all right, let's say Orlando's a win, then Charlotte. Clearly, I mean they did beat us up. They were able to slow the pace down pretty much. You know, big game from Kemba Walker. Definitely, you know, Jefferson, he's going to get his typical 24 points against us at least. That's a tough one. I think we drop Charlotte on Sunday.
I agree. And let's just look ahead on Tuesday. The Warriors, we get no chance. Andrew Bogut is just a beast this season. There's just not going to be any stopping him. And Klay Thompson, if Wade's back in that game, Klay Thompson's got the size to defend Wade in the post. He's probably got 3 inches on Wade, which really hurts that little turnaround that Wade's been going at almost all season. unfortunately,
it's going to be a tough one to watch, right?
It is. And, you know, Harrison Barnes and Luol Deng might as well just stand in the corner the entire game because I feel like they just cancel each other out. And and maybe Bosch can have a good game against David Lee. Because I think we win that matchup in terms of Bosch being a good defender, Lee being a terrible one. Maybe Bosch gets a big game out of it, just like he did last year against the Warriors.
Is he back in the lineup, Lee? I mean, he was out for a few games, right?
I assume he'd be out by then. Back by then. I mean, that's almost a week. That's a week from now, almost.
Yeah.
But who knows? You're right. Who knows? And then there's Iguodala on that second unit, and then... And Steph Curry is just going to absolutely tear us apart, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Especially with that ball movement that Curry's running. There's no chance. I think the best case scenario out of these next four is I'd be happy with 2-2. I'd actually be ecstatic about 2-2.
Wow.
I would.
8-7.
I'll take it.
Yeah, that's not as encouraging as, you know, when we were 5-2, right? 5-2, yeah. That seems so much better at
that
point.
Even when we're 5-2, like, you look at the Clippers and the Warriors, they have some really good matchups against us. The Hornets do too. Like, that's a tough stretch in, what is that, 5 days? 4 games in 5 days against teams that have, every team has a significant matchup advantage against us. Even the Magic with Vucevic. I mean, we talk about Vucevic, but on offense, he does kill us. I'd be happy with 2-2. Even when we were 5-2, I would have been happy with 2-2.
All right. So well, this is a tough stretch. We'll go 3-1.
Really?
3-1. Yeah, I think
Who do we beat? The Magic, the Hornets? Or you said we dropped the Hornets. You think we beat the Clippers, Magic, and Warriors?
Yes.
Wow.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say somehow we get the upset at home. I think the crowd will be out there for the Golden State game. I think we beat them somehow. I don't know. I think Norris Cole takes out Steph Curry somehow. And I think we wind up pulling out a victory. I don't know. Maybe it's possible. Why not?
I'm gonna if that happens, I'm sending you a box of chocolates or something. What are those things that are like shaped like flowers or something? Like what are the edible arrangements? I'm sending you an edible arrangement. if they go 3-1.
Yeah, no, that's all right, man. I appreciate it, but I appreciate the thought, but not necessary. That should be a good game. You got a lot of bragging rights there locally, right? I mean, you know, do you know a lot of Warriors fans?
Everybody here's a Warriors fan. So, actually, I know a lot of Kings fans too, and they're loving this. But I didn't even think about that, and now I'm depressed because if we lose, I'm not going to hear the end of it for days. Because they don't go back. I don't think they play the Warriors again until February. I think I looked ahead in the schedule.
Wow.
So that's a lot of time, and
I'm looking at the schedule right now. So. And we got 4 days off in between, like the Warriors game, and then the following game is the Thanksgiving break. So right. We have
it's at the Knicks on the following Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. So that's good.
Yeah, they have plenty of time to prepare for the triangle that the Knicks aren't running.
Yeah, so that's why, I mean, that's a good way to, you know, you're going to give maximum effort on Tuesday, knowing that you have that long stretch to rest. I mean, maybe Wade sits out against Charlotte or against Orlando, potentially, and then maybe, you know, he gives his all on Tuesday, knowing that he's got to prove something against Klay Thompson just one last time at home in front of the Miami fans, and then he's got 4 days off to rest his, you know, everything.
Well, that's true. You have the chip on your shoulder against Thompson, because every time Wade goes against a semi-decent shooting guard, he picks up his game. I'm looking at the Warriors' schedule right now. Let's see. I don't know if they're coming off a back-to-back. That's on the 25th. They play on the 23rd at Oklahoma City. So, that's not even good, because they'll probably stay in Oklahoma City. I don't know if they'll even fly back to the Bay Area. They probably won't even fly back to Oakland. So you're not even getting that full West Coast to East Coast jet lag.
But there's always the South Beach factor. I mean, true. I can see these guys on on Ocean Drive at 2 o'clock in the morning on Monday the 24th before they go out to the game the next day.
That's true. We do have the club live effect.
You got to quantify that somehow. I don't know if anybody's done any research about
it. I'm on it. That's my next big 2,000-word post.
Can we get FanSided to fund you going to every club on the night of a back-to-back just to see what the impact is?
I'll ask the question. We'll see if that works. I got to put together a sales pitch here. Do some PowerPoint slides or something.
Nice. You're going the extra mile.
That's what I do for my blog, David.
PowerPoint, holy crap. You might get some funny graphics in there and everything. Maybe like the pinwheel effect where the slide pops in and out.
Nice, I like it. You're right. Yeah. I should definitely use the transition, some clip art. Yeah.
Clip art. Very good. Yeah, I love it.
Okay, really quickly, cereal or not cereal? Clippers.
I go no cereal on them.
They were cereal last year. They're not cereal this year.
You know, I can't peg Griffin. I don't know if he's serious or not serious all the time. Like, I mean, he seems like a pretty funny guy at times. But do you remember those comments where he believes like in creationism and stuff like that?
Yeah, he's weird.
I can never really understand if that's really, you know, his background, or if it's just if he's being sarcastic. I don't know if anybody actually even bothered like looking into it or not. But it just seemed a little odd. I'm going to go with not cereal.
Okay. I'm going to agree with you. Magic.
All right. Cereal.
Absolutely. Hornets.
Yeah, cereal. Absolutely.
Did we say cereal last time? I think we did.
I think we did, yeah, absolutely.
If somebody's going back and they could really show us for the sham we are if we said not cereal.
They're going to expose us.
We're exposed. So the Warriors are...
not cereal.
I'm going to go cereal on this one.
Really? I mean, you know them better than I do, but I would say that between, you know, you got a couple of guys on there that are probably cereal, but you got a couple of guys on there that are definitely not cereal. I would say Steph Curry is a not cereal guy.
He's absolutely not cereal, but I just think Iguodala is so cereal. Steve Kerr is extremely cereal, and...
Yeah, but Kerr doesn't call the shots. He doesn't dictate the mood of that team. Iguodala, he eats his Lucky Charms in the showers like everybody else. And, you know, that's just him. He's hiding from everybody because God knows if Steph Curry catches him, he could be on the trading block real quick. Klay Thompson, not cereal. Bogut, maybe. I don't know. What does he wash his cereal down with? Beer? Foster's, right? I guess.
Nails?
a pint of blood, perhaps? Who knows?
Okay, so I think we... I don't know. I just get the sense that they're serial.
We'll see, man. Hey, I'll tell you what. If we win against Golden State and I called not serial, that's it. We know for certain they're not serial. But if
Craig, he goes either way, because he can be serial during games and not serial in the interview at the end of the game. So he's a tough one. All right. We'll figure it out.
Sounds good.
We'll decide if they were serial or not serial after Tuesday.
This has been your almost famous podcast. Tune in next week.
All right. Let's just wrap it up. Thanks for joining me, David. You can catch the All You Can Heat podcast on iTunes. Download it on iTunes. Rate us. Give us a 4-star review, or even better, give us a 5-star review. Say nice things about us, because it would mean the world to David and I. Check out our writing at allyoucanheat.com of the Fansided Network. And thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Thanks, David.
You got it.